This is episode 42 of the Reading Cokes podcast. If you are a book lover who may be interested in joining our online book club, please visit our website at thereadingcove.com. For May 2014, we're discussing Orphan Train by Christina Baker Cline. So hi, I'm Millennia in Florida.
I'm Roberta in Georgia.
And today we are going to be talking about The Reading Cove's May 2014 pick, the 162nd pick we've read together, Orphan Train by Christina Baker Cline. And it was chosen by Roberta.
Yes.
This was your pick. We're just kicking off our online chat in the group with the rest of our members, but Roberta and I are going to, you know, share our thoughts on it.
Well, I loved it. I know maybe you didn't, but I really loved it. I could, even though I grew up in, you know, a different time from either of the main characters, I just felt really engaged by them. I could understand their stories and all they'd had to deal with and how, you know, getting on with their lives despite, you know, tragedies and horrible circumstances, that they were survivors. It was like they could really relate to each other, even though they were years and years apart and you know, in different environments at that particular time of their lives. But other people in the Cove had said they'd read it, and I thought, well, this will be interesting, because after we read the previous Cove pick, The Chaperone, where the main character, Nat, she had, you know, been one of those orphans on the trains, too. So it just gave you, you know, more information about what had happened, because before reading The Chaperone, I never knew such a thing even existed.
Me neither. I had never heard of it.
No.
So it was like a really eye-opening thing for me when we read The Chaperone. And we even had the author join us for the podcast.
Oh, yeah. Well, and that really, you know, made things even better, because you could get her insight into why this particular subject had attracted her, and how she wrote the story, you know, from the particular point of view versus another. So I've talked to people that, you know, some of the different reading buddies, and told them about this, and they would say, oh, I never knew there was such a thing either. So it's not something that's really been played up in history or anything. It's just like little known part of history. But apparently, it, you know, existed for quite a while from what the author said in this book. And, you know.
Yeah, I think it went on from like the 1890s.
Yeah, until 1920. So that's a long time. But I guess it was one of those things they just didn't play up that much, because it really seemed like some people were very fortunate, and then even though you wouldn't know the fate of everybody, but you can just see how even with the circumstances that some people could have had a really good life and others could have had a very, you know, bad life.
Yeah, like Vivian. Vivian didn't have a very good experience at all.
No.
And in The Chaperone, it was the opposite, because that character did have a good experience. It seems like it was just the luck of the draw. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, whoever ended up getting you, what did they want the child for? Did they want the child to help them work the land, to be a servant, you know, for whatever other reason? It was just like, you know, the luck of the draw, or were they, you know, people who genuinely were looking to adopt a child.
Right.
So this Orphan Train, I felt like it was kind of redundant. And I'm not so sure that if I had read it before we read The Chaperone, that I would have enjoyed it more. Because the character of Vivian, the character of Molly, I felt like they were very cliche. And I know everybody loved this book. Most people really love it. It's a bestseller forever and everything. But I actually felt The Chaperone was a much better, much more interesting story.
Well,
this story was, you know, for me, it read like a story I've read many times before. I kind of saw exactly where it was going. There was no surprise. It was just very bland. And I felt like it could have had a little more seasoning to make it more interesting. That's my take on it. It was just very bland. And Vivian, you know, hooking up with, what's his name? Dickie, the little boy, the boy that was on the train with her.
Dutchie.
Yeah. I mean, duh. I mean, I saw that coming way before. It was like, duh, when it finally happened. So it was just very predictable to me. And then Molly, she seemed really cliche. The foster kid who's troubled and who's, you know, trying to look like Lisbeth Salander or something.
Yeah.
You know, it just was cliche. I didn't feel like it added anything new to the Orphan Train experience, you know, from learning about it in Chaperone. So I don't know. I guess that's why I was bored reading it. But I know that I'm in the minority.
Well, yeah, and everybody has to have different opinions. Otherwise, it gets sort of boring because people aren't.
Well, we don't have to.
No, but there's been a few things everybody's loved. But I'm saying sometimes it's good to have opposing points of view. Otherwise, you know, it's like, oh, we loved it, you know, or we hated it.
Right, right.
So you have to have a little contrast. And I said, and I can see your point of view from, you know, a certain perspective. But I said, I guess these people just resonated. Even though I was not an orphan. I don't even know if I ever knew in my younger days any orphans. Now I've, so, I mean, I think that's what I think Molly was afraid of too, that she'd be bounced around from one thing to the other until she got old enough to walk away. And even then you think, well, what are you going to do? You know?
No, but didn't we know? I mean, didn't you know? I mean, right from the beginning, she was going to end up in that house with Vivian.
Well,
come on.
I hope so. You know, you're always afraid because sometimes people go off on weird twists and you don't know.
Well, that would have made it more interesting to me if it hadn't have turned out the way I saw it. You know, like you could see from the beginning.
Well,
that's what it was being set up to do.
But yeah, I mean, but sometimes it's nice to have predictable things. It's comforting. I said, I don't read as many romance books as I once did, but I know if it's a true romance, you know, there's going to be happily ever after. That's just, you know, part of the deal. That
yeah, but the author's skill comes in how they get
the journey to get there.
How their talent shines is when they make it unpredictable.
Right.
What takes place from point A to point Z.
Yeah.
But if it's just, you know, I get why this is such a big commercial hit, because the Orphan Train is something, like we were saying, most people have never heard about it because
right.
it happened such a long time ago and it's just been forgotten.
Right.
And even the kids who rode the trains are now dying off.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, or long dead. So it's just something that's a forgotten part of history. So it's really compelling in that sense.
Oh, yeah.
But I would recommend to our listeners, if you've not read The Chaperone by Laura Moriarty, please go and read that. It's based on the life of Louise Brooks, who's also from the 20s, a Hollywood silent film star. It was really interesting and hit on this Orphan Train history. So I enjoyed that one a lot more than I did this.
Well,
so I recommend that.
Oh, I would too. I mean, even though it's about Louise Brooks, then you learn more about Cora, the chaperone, the title character, the chaperone, because she seems like this pillar of the community and, you know, upstanding woman. And then you find the more you read through, as you say, that she's not going to tell all these people that she came, you know, out there to the Midwest on the orphan train. You know, that's not
exactly
something she plays up either. And that's probably another reason I'm thinking why some of the history of the orphan train died away, because the people that are actually part of it,
they didn't want to talk about it.
It's almost like it was a little bit shameful to them.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, part, because especially like Vivian, she kept a secret about that, you know, and just wasn't telling people, you know, and you can see why she wouldn't want to share it with people, because, you know, it was a pretty awful thing.
She was bounced about. She was,
right.
She went to like three different homes or whatever. And
oh yeah. And
some of them, she wasn't treated very well at all.
I know.
It was horrible.
I know. That was horrible. And I couldn't understand. Oh yeah. Mr. Sorensen. I couldn't understand about him why, you know, it's almost like some of these parents or relatives, if somebody's abused, for some reason, they don't want to believe them. So he didn't want to believe that these people that live like animals that they could be so bad to her.
Because I think it's a lot of it, too, is the responsibility of it. I think a lot of people are in denial, or they'd rather just push it under the rug and tell the kid to, you know, oh, quit telling stories, because they don't want the responsibility of dealing with, okay, if this is true, now what, we have to do something about this.
Right. Right. I mean, Vivian didn't even want to necessarily prosecute these people. I'm sure it was harder to do back in those days, especially.
Yeah, but I think they had so many children.
That's true.
They're understaffed, underfunded.
Oh, yeah.
And they have way too many children to try to be fiduciary. Well, for, yeah. So.
And I can understand back then because that was like right before the Depression. But there's still a lot of people that, you know, are living sort of a hard scrabble life. So mm-hmm. I could see how it'd be hard to find her a new place. But, you know, I just I got kind of angry with him because you just think he wasn't. He
could have done better.
He could have done better, you know. Granted, they didn't have, you know, some of the stuff they do now. And granted, things still bad happen today, like you said, with the foster system. But I just think I got kind of angry with him because I think he could have done a much better job.
Yeah, and that's often, you know, when children are abused, they're failed by a lot of adults. A lot of adults fail them.
Right.
And sometimes the people you'd think, you tell them, okay, tell someone, speak, don't suffer in silence. Don't keep it to yourself. But sometimes the worst thing that can happen is they tell someone who does nothing.
Right.
Or who blames them.
At the same time, I thought it was kind of neat with Molly to make herself more presentable. She knew if she was going to work for this, you know, very elderly lady, she couldn't go in and looking like the goth girl, whatever.
Exactly.
That would probably, you know, freak out poor Vivian, you know, really badly. But I think she got a little bit more comfortable with her after a while, after she saw that, you know, even though she was old and seemed to be living a comfortable life, she was a bit more interested in Molly and a bit more unconventional about what she'd expect from people. Because it sounded like she even told Molly, you know, she knew that it couldn't be the way they were trying to tell the story to brighten it up a little bit, that the maid and then the boy were trying to, you know, tell her it was okay. It was a school project when it really was, you know, community service.
Right.
But, you know, that was good because I don't think she would have, unless Molly had done something horrible, like steal the silver or something else. I think she was going to accept her the way she was. Cause you know, she was pretty good about accepting people the way they were after as much as she'd gone through over life.
I think that the whole transition, you know, from Molly being, oh, I don't want to do this. Maybe I should just go to jail or, you know, whatever, right, to suddenly becoming so interested in Vivian's life and wanting to help her track down her birth family. And, you know, she found her sister.
Yeah.
And, you know, I just felt like we needed some spice here. Because, like, with The Chaperone, I have to keep making the comparison because they have that similar theme. But it was more interesting what happened with Cora.
Right.
Because we find that, you know, she was hiding more secrets. Her character was so much more three-dimensional and more meaty. You know, she had the gay husband.
Yeah.
You know, in 1950s or whatever it was. And so it was much more interesting. There was a lot more ingredients in that stew. And for me, in this Orphan Train, there weren't that many ingredients. It was just, you know, like beige. Like Vivian's life was so beige. You know, she ends up running the store for her parents, and then she learns the store business, and she reunites with Dutchie, and then, you know, now she's old and she needs to clean out her attic. And so, you know, Lisbeth Salander's coming over to help her.
Well, but
and she's going to, you know, heal, and they're all going to heal together. And then boom, she can leave the, you know, wicked stepmother, I mean, foster mother, who's, you know, not treating her right. And the foster dad, who's too limp noodle to do anything to help her.
Right.
And again, she was being failed by those adults.
Yeah. Well, they were a little bit better to her than some in the past. But yeah, foster mother, she was kind of, you know, Molly's probably well rid of her because she was just a little bit too high strung.
She didn't really like her. And
she
I
didn't like
understand
her, but
that.
Donna, she was just a little too high strung that she really wasn't cut out to, you know, be a mother of a teenager. I mean, it'd be even harder with foster children because even say, you know, a lot of orphans or whatever, or children that are being adopted from foster care, if they're a little bit older, it's not always easy. It's really hard because they've already probably suffered through abuse and have like emotional problems. So it's going to be hard. They're going to come with a lot of emotional baggage.
Yes,
so,
and clearly, Molly was a difficult
because
of the way she presented herself and her attitude, which is not, you know, atypical, but
no,
the way she dressed wasn't typical. And so I'm not defending, what was her name? Donna. I'm not defending that she couldn't have done more and she couldn't have been more patient and understanding, But when you put that together, this wasn't your typical foster kid either.
No, no.
So you have that. And then Molly was, you know, always giving her lip, and she wasn't making it easier for herself.
No.
So it you know, and that's not uncommon.
No.
I think that was realistic. I really do. And I feel like it was realistic that Donna wouldn't get along with her. Most people probably wouldn't. She would have to really open up more.
Right. But I think Molly had her other issues, and then on top of a more typical teenage rebellion also.
Right. So, which is typical, right.
Yeah. And like you said, and then Donna's husband, too, that he definitely didn't wear the pants in the family, so to speak.
No, he was a limp noodle.
Yeah, he was just kind of, you know, standing back. He didn't want to stand up because I think he liked Molly, but he just figured that it wouldn't be, you know, good if he went against his wife. She'd probably have a, you know, his fit with him too. So I guess he figured he had to cave on that. Otherwise it would just be unbearable around his home. So
yeah, and he couldn't control her.
No.
He clearly, like you said, she wore the pants.
Right. It's one thing to have this rebellious teenager stirring the pot, and then, you know, if your wife's unhappy too, it's just, I can understand, but I still think he had been a little bit more forceful or more manly or whatever you want to call it.
Yeah, he could have, I think he could have done a bit more, but it wasn't in his personality. And he really read to me like a kind of emasculated man.
Right.
Like,
right.
Yeah.
Over time, I've known quite a few of what people call the yes dears. So he was more, he's more of a yes dear. You know, if he wanted to get along in life, he just better say yes dear as much as possible. I think Molly had such a rough time. It was hard for her. She didn't want to, she would be defensive against just about anybody because she'd had a rough time, and she'd be afraid to open herself up and really love people because she'd just be afraid she'd just get sent back again or rejected like Donna was doing or whatever too. So it was like a self-fulfilling prophecy that, you know, she was afraid these people were going to turn her away, and they did because she had this persona.
Expectation.
Yeah, this expectation. She had this persona that was really off-putting too.
Yeah.
To me, even before Molly knew more about Vivian's background, I think she had this sort of feeling that this was a kindred spirit, even though they were, you know, decades apart in age. Mm-hmm. I mean, basically Vivian was telling Molly stuff she'd never told anybody probably for 80 years, really.
Exactly.
You know, that
she never told her husband.
Well, no, I mean, her first.
Very little.
Yeah, I mean, her second husband. But her first husband didn't even know that much. You know, I don't think she shared that much. Just, you know, they had known each other on the train and from there. And he said a little bit about his, you know, experience after he got taken off the train and put in a situation. But I don't think she probably even shared with Dutchie that the two horrible situations before the Nielsens.
Right. And she didn't really know what had happened with him, what experiences he'd had.
No, I mean, he shared a little bit, but I think it was probably fairly superficial too.
Yeah.
It just wasn't something you wanted to burden the other person with.
Any memorable scenes for you? The most memorable scene for me, I really laughed a bit when Molly shot back at Donna and she was like, you know, you get money for me being here.
Oh, yeah. Okay. About that. Yeah. So, you know, yeah, that's the thing too, because, you know, that's the thing sometimes people forget about with these foster homes. I know there are some people out there that really do take it
love the children,
out of the goodness of their heart. But for everyone like that, I'm sure there's other people that take them in just because they can get, you know, some extra money, because they don't always spend the money on the child that they get like they should. That was pretty neat, because I think that, you know, set Donna back a little ways, like, oh, you know, she's on to me. So I think, you know, even though it was sappy, that I liked when Vivian ran into Dutchie. I mean, that was just,
yeah.
So to run into somebody you hadn't seen in years and years at some place you least expected it, it was sappy, but it was sweet.
It was predictable for me. I knew that was going to happen.
It was still sweet, you know, especially in light of those other girls. They were wild, you know, going off and drinking and carousing and everything, you know. And then poor Vivian was afraid to say, because these girls seemed so much more sophisticated, that she was afraid to say that she loved the Wizard of Oz. You know, because the other one was like, yeah, it's all right. But... But those other girls, they were just Philistines to me. You know, they had they had no culture. They had no class. You know, they were all about partying.
Yeah, she was more mature because she had lived through some tough stuff.
Yeah, it was you know, sad that they didn't have that much time together. But like you said, in a way, that was predictable too. That because so many people didn't come back from the war. Most people that, you know, have lost a spouse, whether it be short term as her or long term as other people, that even if you go on to get remarried, it's never going to be quite the same.
Okay, so that's going to be our discussion of Orphan Train by Christina Baker Klein. Thank you for listening. And always, as always, please continue to leave us your comments below. And stay tuned for next episode. We're going to be discussing The Rosie Project by Graham Simsion. See you next time. Bye.
Bye.